When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in to another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, set manager for Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at @SEH_DaveM. And boy, we're having a lot of fun in this first week of the 21-22 Blackhawks season, aren't we? Aren't we, class? Isn't everyone just having a great time? Yeah. I've got my usual linemates with me this evening. This is probably very quickly going to turn into a group therapy session because of the way things have gone for the first week. So let's bring them all in. Up first, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, Shepherd Price.
Hey, it could be worse. Alex DeBrincat and Patrick Kane could be injured. Because, you know, happens to teams.
Don't.
That happens. That happens to some teams that they miss both of their top two wings for weeks on end.
Or he loses your top two centers before training camp even opens like the Blackhawks last year. So,
hey, Pia Suter was fine. And Dylan Strom, we'll get to him. He deserves to be back in the lineup.
No, he's dead now. He doesn't exist. I don't think he's on the roster.
He's dead until he gets traded, and then he's alive again. He's a zombie.
Yeah. Or maybe he'll get a new boss, and then he'll be brought back to life. But we'll get back to that in a second. Also with us this evening, he is to Second City Hockey what Jeremy Bohm is to Touche Amore. It is Mil Savic.
Go Bulls.
Go Bulls, indeed. As I'm looking right now, they're still up by two in the fourth quarter. So, you know, the one good basketball team in Chicago just finished their championship season. So now maybe we have another good basketball team in Chicago.
Yes, congrats in order to the Chicago Sky.
Yeah, well, congrats done to the Chicago Sky.
Hey, there's a good Chicago team. And it's not the one it was supposed to be, because we also need to have a group therapy session about that, because we didn't talk about that last week.
I mean,
enough.
Yeah, I guess we could. I don't know what else there is to say. They got their ass kicked by a better team.
They need to fire the manager. Well, hey, look, a lot of teams need to fire their coach. Hey!
Boy, we're off to a roaring start. Before we get too many more tangents, let's bring in the last member of the usual group. It is Second City Hockey's Boolin Wall of Text, Betsy.
I was going to say that if you guys hear, I'm like right above where my mom is watching the Braves game. So hopefully you won't hear. She loves to yell at the TV, good or bad.
Go so Barbs.
Hopefully you guys won't hear it through the thing. But
I kind of hope we do now. Actually, I hope somebody's enjoying sports right now.
She like Jack talks Silver, to baby. The TV sometimes too. Like I'm.
Do you not?
I mean, she sometimes talks to like the news people, and I'm like, Mom, nobody cares. Even if they could hear you, those people are dead inside. But at least the sports people probably would pay attention. So I hope they do well. I don't personally care, but for my mom's sake, I hope.
Jocktober, baby, go Barbs.
Oh no, this is a bad time to say that I'm hoping that the Dodgers win the World Series because karma, either way. Either Mookie Betts beats the team that traded him because they're cheap or they beat the fucking Astros.
I know is that the Braves like were up in the last game and then people were like, oh no, they've done it. They're gonna pull that Atlanta team. Like, we can't ever be ahead.
Were they winning 28-3 at any point? Or
no, I don't talk about that.
Jesus, that'd be a hell of a baseball score. It'd be
impressive in baseball, but you know an Atlanta team could blow that lead, even if they were scoring by one at a time.
Yeah. Dave, I feel like you may have seen that lead before in high school covering a game. It happens.
27-2 rings a bell. So I think
it's probably some Andrean blowout.
No, it was in Central Indiana, and I think they stopped the game because some kids were throwing rocks at the center fielder. So they had to stop the game and call the cops.
Yeah, that's terrible.
So there you go.
Holy shit.
So speaking of terrible teams that are getting blown out, the 2021-2022 Chicago Blackhawks, ladies and gentlemen, 4 games, 0-3-1. They have been outscored, I think it's 15-2 at 5-on-5 play. I feel like I'm running out of words. Like, I don't know what to say about this team anymore. Because of all the things I expected to happen this year, I don't think 0-4 in the first 4 games would have been it. I don't give a shit about the overtime. They're 0-4 for all intents and purposes. So I guess my first question that I'm going to ask the group here, and Shay, I'll come to you first. This is surprising still, right? That they're this bad?
I'm going to steal something LBR posted in our group Slack. Okay. Jeremy Colleton has started... And correct me if I'm wrong on this, LBR. 0-3, 0-3, 0-4, 0-4.
That's correct.
So it's not surprising in the slightest that the coach who has really bad starts is having a really bad start.
I think I missed that while we were all yelling yelling to no one in particular about how bad the Blackhawks were. I remember the bad start last season. I didn't realize that that has happened every single season.
Yeah, under Colleton. He doesn't start seasons well, even when he's starting a decent part into the season. Is the roster better? Yes. Is the coach better? Clearly not.
So I guess piggybacking off that, we'll bring Betsy in. Then I'll ask you the same question. Even knowing the numbers that maybe you knew those, I don't know if you realize that this week or if you knew that ahead of time, are you surprised by how bad the Blackhawks have been so far?
Yes, because I assumed, like, even if they lost, they weren't going to look as bad as they have, you know, like, so the other part of that stat that I found, it like the losing stat, is that under Jeremy Colleton, they've also lost 7 out of the first 10. Including when he came in his first season post Q. So that's those are weird stats. Like, how do you even do that? But they kept telling us, you know, hey, we just need better players, you know, like, or hey, we just need older players, or hey, we just need a full training camp. Well, they got all three of those technically, I guess. You know, we can quibble about if the team actually is like really, really better, but I felt that they were going to at least be competitive. Even if they lost games, I wasn't going to go, I think that looks terrible. And I've thought that every single game, except for maybe short periods of time. Maybe a little bit in the first period of the last game. Maybe. I still felt that they were shooting from too far out, but that's fine. So I'm surprised at how they've looked while losing, not necessarily that they are losing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the other thing, like you mentioned about all the excuses of like training camp and not having a good roster. And then like you get to the season and there's like the first 3 games, it was, oh, well, there was references to them playing another team in their home opener. Cool. You got your home opener Tuesday night and the song remained the same. So I don't understand. I mean, it felt like they played a little bit better, but you still lost. Eventually, this is a results-based business. You did not win the game. And as Herm Edwards told us all, you play to win the game. So I don't know. I don't know what other excuses there are to have. Like, I there's the results aren't there. So I guess the last member of the group we're going to bring in, Millen, throw the same question at you. Are you surprised by how shitty the Blackhawks have been the first four games this season?
I'm not really surprised at the record, but kind of like LBR said, I'm a bit surprised at the performance, but only because if you look at last season, they got their asses kicked in the first three games, and I think they lost in overtime in the fourth. But Tampa Bay was clearly a lot better than them.
Right.
But this year, it's like New Jersey's not that good. Pittsburgh had a lot of their big guys out.
No Crosby, no Malkin.
No Rust.
No Rust.
I mean, you know, there's the Islanders are having a really slow start. And then in their opener, it's like, okay, Colorado, fine. Chuck it up as a loss. Even without McKinnon, that's a great team. But it's like they can't even score 5-on-5 until garbage time. And it's like you got Marc-Andre Fleury in net. You got Seth Jones. And then up front, it's like you got Taves back. You got Doc healthy, who's not looking bad. You have Tyler Johnson, who they were going to – it was going to be the first-line center according to, you know, preseason. So it's like, what the hell is wrong with them?
Well, it's funny you ask that, Mill, because there was a tweet today from Greg Wojcinski that he pointed out just how bad the Blackhawks have been from the, you know, all the 5-on-5 possession numbers. I guess scroll down to find it here. He mentioned that the Hawks are dead last in the league at 5-on-5 expected goals per 60 minutes with a rate of 1.25. And they're 26th in expected goals against, allowing 2.53 per 60 minutes. Now, obviously, those numbers are bad. But here's the part of that that I think someone who may not cover the team as close or follow the team as closely as we have would notice is that the Hawks last season were 28th in the league in expected goals for and 30th in expected goals against if you go down to a rate of per 60 minutes. It's the same shit that they were doing last year and the year before that and the year before that. And I think, Betsy, I'll bring this to you because I know this is something that's come up in our Slack chat a lot. Just the amount, the extent to which that the Blackhawks are doing the same things that they have been doing in the past that have made them unsuccessful. How much is that alarming, terrifying, insert negative emotion here? I guess just what kind of effect does that have on you?
Well, first of all, you have the people who are still clinging to this idea that it's like personnel, you know, and they'll say something like the big guns aren't scoring. And it's like, that's such a lame cop out to me now because yes, it's only four games, but if it's the same repetitive thing over and over again, that means it's beyond the players at that point. How can you not at least acknowledge that that's a big factor in what's happening? Also, Patrick Kane is actually a point per game, and DeBrincat is pretty, you know, he's like 4 out of whatever points. So it's not like they're not producing. They're just not doing it 5-on-5, which, again, they were lucky to be doing it last year, honestly, and the year before that, because the Blackhawks have terrible zone time. Like, they can't, you know, we know that they're terrible off the cycle. They still are. We know their transition game is weak. They can get in for rushes, but they can't stay there. And their rushes are kind of wonky anyway. So
it's very much a one and done.
One and done. Yeah, exactly. So
one and done. And that one isn't even that quality of a chance.
Yeah.
It's more of a 0.5 and done.
Yeah. Get on those like little, you know, all the charts people do. They're in the wasted offense category every time. The, you know, so what is the phrase? Like, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, it's insanity. So it's
the definition, that's the definition of insanity is that you keep doing it over and over and you
expect different results. It's insane to me that people won't acknowledge this is probably a systematic issue. And therefore, if you don't change the system, you're just going to keep getting terribly insane results.
And that the system thing comes up all the time. And I'm like, I'm almost to the point of like, just sick of talking about it, but like, regardless of whatever system, like how you feel about it, just point to the results. The results are always the same. So if the process never changes, like, as far as we know, there's not been any, I haven't noticed anything substantial in terms of, you know, systemic changes that they've done. So if the results are always the same, eventually that just falls back to the guy that's implementing the systems, which is the head coach.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. And there was one other thing that somebody pointed out, because they were like, oh, but that was just like, their example was Murphy made a bad pass there. And it's like, how many times have you seen that exact same bad pass though? It's by design. Like, yeah, Murphy should have like tried to figure out if there was a better route, but this, like how he's running the transition out of the DZ is through that type of pass. So it's a combination, but at the same time, if your entire system can be that fucked up after one mistake, then your system's fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, eventually, you know, if the same, you're plugging in new players this season, but the same problems are recurring. So it's, you know, eventually, like, you can't always pin it on the players. Yes, the players are making mistakes. I don't, you know, there's been plenty of turnovers. Henrik Borgstrom set up Oliver Wahlstrom with a 3-on-1 on Tuesday night. Eric Gustafsson made a shitty play in his own end to
you could just stop after a shitty play.
Yeah. And well, and then one of the goals, I think against New Jersey, he jumped up into play for no reason and then was kind of didn't get his ass back to the blue line as quick as he should have. And then there's a 2-on-1 the other way and Stillman didn't do anything to break up the 2-on-1 and a goal got scored. So there, the players are not playing. Maybe they could play better for sure, but it's still, it's when it's, when the symptoms are the same as they've been the last 3 to 4 seasons, I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I mean, like I know we've had the fire Colleton discussion before, but I mean, I can't think of any other way this gets better.
Yeah. He got booed at the beginning of the game and at the end of the game, and he deserved both rounds.
Yeah. And like, and obviously the home opener is going to sell out. There's going to be people there. And I know they're doing the Patrick Kane celebration on Thursday. So maybe that'll get some butts in the seats that weren't going to be there otherwise. But I think the biggest thing you're going to start hearing and noticing is the lack of noise at Blackhawks games. Seats are going to start being empty. People aren't going to want to, people won't want to go drive out and watch this team if they're just going to get their asses kicked. Even if resale tickets are, you know, $10 for 300 level seats, like it was 2007 all over again.
Yeah, but 2007, at least they missed the playoffs 07-08 by 3 points.
Yeah.
And they were young and coming. Okay. Like, this is
okay, hard. 2003, Mel, if you want. Let's.
Well, yeah, but same. No, I get your point. It's like, I was thinking the same thing. Like, don't get me wrong. As a person, I'm not trying to attack the coach. But the boos for the entire organization are well warranted at this point. And it's like, people are going to stop paying to go see them. You're right. You're going to notice it.
The good news is they're lottery protected, right? So, like, they can get Shane Wright. They can get Shane Wright. They can get Shane Wright. They're perfectly
fine. Well, one thing I was going to mention about ticket sales was what Friedman brought up in his 31 thoughts, because his only point about the Blackhawks was, you know, it seems really soon to be talking about this, but they're like, the Blackhawks are concerned about ticket sales. I don't know if they're really concerned about the money or the perception. You know, it's all about the image of the sellout and all this other stuff, because we know
it's PR. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know which actually matters to them. But that could mean something, you know, like I get, like you said, it's not going to happen probably on Patrick Kane night, especially since they just announced they're giving away. Everybody who goes is going to get a signed poster, and then a first number of people will also get other stuff. So they're like, please come. We're going to throw gifts at you. Please come to our games.
They're bribing fans, essentially.
I want to like throw something out on this point if I can real quick.
Go ahead.
I think Dave and I always reminisce about like when they sucked, but we had fun going. I think that it was the kind of that camaraderie of like people who cared about hockey. But when they started getting good, the United Center turned into like this weird, like yuppie thing where they like where our family season seats were, they put a bar in all those four corners. Mm-hmm. And people were coming, they stood at the bar and didn't watch the game, and it was like the place to be, and it was like happening inside the concourse. They didn't need like anything outside the UC. And I think that they're starting to lose that because people are like, why would I pay my money when it's not a good time on the ice or in the concourse? And I think that that's what they're worried about, is people are like, F this.
It's not a tourist destination anymore.
Right. And I don't know if that
they're the Yankees. They're the Yankees of Chicago, but they don't have 27 rings.
Yeah, well, but they had 3 in 6 years, though, which is pretty damn good.
It's kind of like, I don't know if that makes drives the point home anymore, but it's like, I can feel it, like, because I've seen it kind of go downhill. And I always hated that aspect of, like, oh, like, I'm glad new people are watching hockey, but I don't like that the people are coming to bar hop and whatever. But that's what the Wirtz family wants. They don't need money. Their liquor distribution makes enough money for, you know, 10 yeah. hockey teams.
Well, I think that, like, that kind of that gets to a bigger picture thing about pro sports in general, that it's a very, for lack of a better term, it's a very corporate feeling to it now. It's more, they're not really concerned about, like, the hardcore diehard fans. They're more about getting the rich people that'll, you know, spend a shit ton of money because they're right. getting all the high rollers there. So I think that's not just a Blackhawks problem. I think that's a problem across all pro sports. But I will say, like, I think you'd agree with me, Mill, is that I'd rather have the Hawks be good and have to pay $100 for one game a season than, you know, $10 for 8 games that I can go see, but they're going to get their asses kicked every time.
Yeah, and, like, that's the bottom line, is it's entertainment, and we're fans, and we want to be entertained.
And we are not at the moment.
No, so. No. And us four are covered. Like, you know, think about people who, like, it's their casual night out. You know, they don't have the association, and they probably feel like shit paying that money to go see them get squashed.
Yeah, exactly. Why would you go to that when you could go see Venom for much cheaper?
I don't know.
Right, or anything.
It's,
I mean,
really expensive.
I mean, Chicago.
Movies are, like, cheaper than the Blackhawks games.
I feel like we should visit this in a week or two, because I don't know. Last time I went to movies, I could not believe how expensive it was. But anyway, we're getting far away from. So let's reel this back in slightly. Dylan Strome. We made a reference to him at the start about him possibly being dead. We think he's alive. He's been seen at practice a couple times. What did Dylan Strome do? Can somebody explain this to me? Did he run over Colleton's dog?
My guess is he didn't play defense enough, but, like, who is Borgstrom? No. Is Johnson? Really? No.
Is Kane?
No.
I tweeted that from the Second City Hockey account. I don't know what Henrik Borgstrom is doing or has done that Dylan Strome can't do yet. Granted, 4 games for Borgstrom. He's got time to prove me wrong. But so far, I don't see it.
I actually have liked Borgstrom, and I was one of the people that was very skeptical because watching him in the AHL that one year was just like, I was like, what the fuck? but I've liked him a lot better than I thought I would. I thought he had a good game prior to his turnover. But you're right. I don't think he's done anything that Strome didn't do in his first 2 seasons. It's like they forgot that those seasons existed. And so do fans, because both those seasons he was on 50-point paces. Of course, you know, they both were shortened, and so those paces might have not carried over, but still, 50-point players are not easy to come by. And he did it not playing top 6 minutes. Now, granted, he was obviously with DeBrincat a lot, but DeBrincat fed off him too. So
it's a mutually beneficial thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like they have such a weird innate chemistry, and Strome also has really good chemistry with Kane. And I understood not playing him last year with them because I don't think he's a top line center. And I thought even just plugging him up there probably wouldn't have been good for him or the team, but that's not the case now. There's at least 2 guys that can go ahead of him. And if they're going to be playing DeBrincat not with Kane, why not put Strome in there? Like, what is the point of putting freaking Mike Hardman on a line with
move. That's the move that I just was floored by. Like, I think Hardman's fine. Like, I think he could be a worthwhile fourth liner. No problem with that. But the fact that you brought this guy up from Rockford and put him on your third line instead of Dylan Strome, who has been here the whole goddamn time, I don't understand that. Because Mike Hardman is not a third line player. He probably never will be.
No, and DeBrincat needs a playmaker, and I don't see that from Borgstrom yet.
Or I don't see it from Hardman for sure.
It's not the line combinations, it's the effort.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Also, the whole hard to play against thing that has been said multiple times now about this team.
Oh, it's, fucking hell.
First of all, they've been outscored by how much now? 15-3 at 5-on-5? No, I think it's 3, because I think Entwistle's goal that was like in the last.
Oh, yeah.
And Whistle's goal was at 5-on-5.
Yeah, technically.
Oh, that doesn't count.
They have three goals. Counts. They have not that scored counts. A goal at 5-on-5 when the game has been closer than two goals. They were down two or down three when they scored those three goals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or down four.
Oh, down four.
And two of them happened when the game was nowhere near, like there's no way they were going to be able to come back for.
Garbage time heroes.
So either way, you know, they've been outscored by a wild amount, but hey, maybe they're hard to play against. So you know, it's hard to play against. They're very easy to play against. The other team is scoring a fuck ton.
Exactly. Name a team who won the Stanley Cup or like went far in the playoffs who was hard to play against that wasn't because of the talent of their team. It was like, grinders. Montreal, maybe, but even them, like Nick Suzuki is not a grinder. Nick Suzuki is very talented. Phil Deneau is not a grinder. Phil Deneau is very talented. And they were carried by Carey Price.
Teams are feasting on them.
Yeah.
Like,
keep going,
Bill. I was just going to say, like, it's pretty obvious even to, like, I know people like to talk about the eye test and the stats and stuff, but both of them are showing the same shit.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I don't dislike Mike Hardman as a player, but one, he's not particularly that great defensively either, so it's not like that wasn't his calling in college either. He was on a line with offensive players and did well with them, so he was able to play kind of almost – like a Bickle role on those things. So he could be like the body checker, the space maker, who gets a lot of secondary assists. I don't think he'd ever explode like Bickle did in the playoffs, but you know, he could be something on a line, but not with DeBrincat. Okay. Well, yeah. Don't waste it with DeBrincat. You put him on a third bum slayer line with two other guys that might chip in, but
the more we talk about this, I feel like I'm getting retroactively more upset about this because your best goal scorer, he was on a 50 fucking goal pace last season, and you put a fourth line AHL, NHL fringe guy on his goddamn opposite wing. What the fuck is the point of that? Like, and Alex DeBrincat is not the type where he's going to get the puck, skate through 10 people, and score a goal. That's not, he's a sniper. He's good at when other people set him up for goals.
He is like Alex Ovechkin. Yeah. He's like Alex Ovechkin.
And that's not a knock on DeBrincat. He's really, 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 really good at that skill. So get him someone who can get him the puck.
Well, this comes down to the fact that Colleton doesn't try to dictate matchups. He just tries to mix the lines. And that doesn't mean jack shit in this league. Like when Quenneville used to do it, people don't put the context to it that he would mix up his lines and attempt to match the other team's lines better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'll say, I haven't actually disliked most of JC's lines this season. I thought most of them have made sense. The only two things that haven't made sense to me so far, at least when the game starts, was Tyler Johnson is the top line center, but I can understand why he wanted to try that, but I mean, that was always going to fail. And then Mike Hardman now. Those are the only two that I've been like, what the fuck? So I'm at least going to say I don't dislike his construction. I do was going to say this podcast is brought to you by the letter F. we keep dropping them.
While we're doing this, getting it off our chest, I just have to make my peace. I cannot fucking watch Eric Gustafson anymore. He looks like a left-handed Sergei Samsonov if he was a defenseman. I mean,
Eric Gustafson, they knew the problems with Eric Gustafson when they signed him. I don't know what they were doing. There were other guys available. Like, Sammy Vatanen's playing in Europe now. They could have gotten Sammy Vatanen for James.
Yeah, like, why are people not mad? Like, he sucks. Like, he's so bad. And then Stillman's chasing hits and people are all excited about that. It's like, yeah, he's hitting guys because the Hawks don't fucking have the puck.
Yeah, that play, like he flattened Darren Helm in the corner. Coming up the boards. Stillman jumped up and blasted him. But like they show the one angle. I think the Hawks account tweeted it out. You can clearly see Helm gets the puck out of the zone. He makes the play. Stillman's, you know, up at the faceoff dots laying the wood, so he's out of position. That's the That's not how that works.
Fuck Darren Helm, too.
I'm assuming that they got Gus because he was on Colleton's AHL team that overachieved because of not like over like Franson and Ed Stell or how you say his name, Ed Stell, whatever.
Victor,
the guy who can't skate. And for some reason we wanted him. They both had super high shooting percentages. And then the playoffs, Colin Delia and Jeff Glass of all people put up over 9-3-0 in like all but two or three games the entire time. So so Gus knew the system, I guess. But
doesn't look like it.
I was about to say, it looks like he doesn't know what he's doing, which we already knew that was.
And both of them look lost, right? Am I wrong? Like, they look like they don't know where they're supposed to be half the time.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing with Eric Gustafson is it's like similar to what I said with Borgstrom and Strome. It's like, I don't know what Eric Gustafson does, that what mistakes he's making that Ian Mitchell can't be making and possibly make himself better in the long term.
Oh, no.
Right. Or Nicholas Baudin.
I don't want Mitchell. Baudin.
Yeah.
No. Mitchell doesn't need to be up here. Baudin doesn't need to be up here. Get them far away. Like, first of all, the Ice Hawks, Adam King doesn't run the same exact system as, like, they don't. So yeah. It's an interesting thing because it's the same thing when Colleton was down in the AHL. He didn't run what Q ran. It's
a great organization.
It's weird.
I guess Derek King better have his resume ready, because if they let Colleton go, they'll just bring up the AHL coach, right?
Again.
No more.
No.
All right. Look, the one thing we're going to take a quick break here in a second, but I just wanted to get this out. Like, I don't think none of us have inside information. We don't know if Colleton's going to get fired. Here, I'll do really quick. Gut feeling. Does Colleton make it to Halloween? Yes or no? Mill.
Yeah.
Betsy.
God, I hope not. But yeah, fuck.
I think it does.
I say no a lot on this podcast. No.
I'm going to say yes, because I think what's going to happen, they have a stretch coming up. They play Thursday night against Vancouver. Then they have one game in 5 days with Detroit in the middle of it. I don't think it's going to happen there, but I think if shit doesn't change real soon, their Hawks are going to give them every chance to right this ship. On Friday, November 12th, they play the Coyotes at home, and then they have 4 days off. If they don't have shit turned around by then, I cannot see him making it past that. So maybe
the new
coach
will take over on the 17th.
Go ahead, Mill.
I'm sorry. You're right. The 17th would be that 4 day break, right? Yeah. End of it. That might be when we have a new coach here.
Yeah. That's
it. I think it might be if they go 0-6, they might be an Ed Orgeron situation where, like, he gets fired internally and he's just coaching till then.
Go Tigers. We're going to take a break. We're going to calm ourselves down and we're going to talk some more Hawks on the other side of this break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison. Deep breaths, everyone. We're gonna calm down here. We're gonna take a second. It's only four games. God help us. So we're gonna try and look for some optimism. I've been trying to think of these for a while today and haven't come up with too many. So I'm just going to throw it out to the panel and we'll see where it goes. Anybody got any reasons for optimism other than the fact that it's only four games?
Kirby Doc looks real good, especially on the PK. Like, I was somebody who was like, I need Kirby Doc to show me something early on this season, before the season. He's showing me stuff and I like it and it's good. And I'm glad. And Kirby Doc.
I would agree that there's been glimpses. It's like from him, like him and the rest of the team, of course, just more goals and more contentious situations. Yeah,
more
within the
finishing
game.
Is good, but
finishing consistency.
Yeah. I put this in the, because somebody was brought up the whole, like, why aren't the big guns scoring? And I was like, well, if you look at their expected goals at 5-on-5, Kirby Doc has 0.52 expected goals per 60, which is top six. Depending on your minutes,
fine.
You know, they can go. McDavid is 0.54. So it's
Kirby Doc just as good as Connor McDavid.
Right?
You're here for
totally the best. But what I'm saying, you know, comparatively, like, that means he's doing pretty well. You know, he's not finishing yet, but he's getting his chances.
So
at the very least.
And I think you mentioned this when we were talking about Doc last season, that the underlying numbers were doing well. So it's not like there's things to be excited about. It's just like, I like that the underlying numbers are well, but
yeah,
the underlying numbers don't win games just yet. Yeah. So hopefully that process leads to better results, I guess is how I would describe that.
That's true. I was also going to say, I know DeBrincat hasn't been, you know, he hasn't put up a bazillion points yet either, but he also looks really good to me. And again, it just depends on, people always look at just the points for those players, but he's looked good, especially on the PK, which is an interesting thing to say because the special teams has been rough for years. Even under Q, the power play wasn't great, but both of those have looked really competent. And part of the reason they have is because of players like DeBrincat.
Yes, the power play and penalty kill are both, I think the penalty kill is still perfect, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So it's definitely tied for first in the league because you can't do any better than that. The power play is very good. So there's that.
I'm going to sanity check us on that because I'm like.
Well, while she's checking that, Mill, do you have any reasons for optimism?
As a group thing, the booing and the ticket prices kind of tells me that people are starting to see that there's a problem. And, you know, in all seriousness, like, I've been calling out a lot of shit the past few seasons, even before I was on a member of the site or a member of the staff. But it's clearly a problem that people are recognizing now. And my only thing is I want people to voice their, like, not like, don't go chase Jeremy Colleton and take pitchforks to his house, but tell the fucking organization, like, hey, we want winning hockey. And it seems like people are starting to do that with the voice they have. So hopefully that's good.
I think. Yeah. I like something negative into a positive. Like, yeah. We might get the change we want.
Well, I mean, exactly. Jeremy Colleton, after every goal, they show him close up on the bench, and he looks like Georgie watching a sailboat go down the storm drain, and then he sees Pennywise, you know, like Tim Curry down there, and you're like,
preference.
This guy, but he doesn't change anything. Like, he doesn't know how to respond, and it's like, it's not his fault that he got the job. He fell ass backwards into it. I've gone off on this rant too many times. But the people that are in charge need to change it because the team keeps losing. So I'm hoping that fans voicing their opinions online and at the games and by not going or not buying shit, maybe they'll go, okay, well, you know, we need to change something. That's my only take.
Yeah. The whole point of capitalism is that you vote with your dollar. And if you vote with your dollar against the Blackhawks, because not only are they bad, the organization is troublesome. Let's not forget that this is probably karmic reward for what happened in 2010.
It's funny, like
they kind of deserve this.
It's legitimately almost overshadowed all of the sexual assault allegations that are still being litigated in court. Like, they're exactly. So bad that they're overshadowing lawsuits.
That's pretty fucking bad. Not great.
So if you take your money away from the Blackhawks, maybe they'll get the message that, like, there's a lot of things you got to fix.
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, we talked about it a little bit. I think you're going to start seeing NPC. It's for a lot of reasons, and I think we talked about this at some point in the offseason. But like, I know people who are on that season ticket waiting list and got off of it, and now they're getting called by the Hawks asking them if they want to get season tickets. Which, like they said, the Hawks never used to call me, and now they're calling people. Which I know that's anecdotal, and I've heard that stories from.
They call me once a week.
Yeah. So.
And email me if I don't pick up. Which I don't pick up.
And they text you and they tweet you and they really want you in the stadium.
Hey, this is Brandon, your season ticket rep, dude. I haven't given you my money. You're not my rep. Leave me alone.
You need to be blocking those numbers.
I mean, they have so many phone lines; it just doesn't matter. And they want $5,000 or $5,600 for two seats upstairs.
They're worse than those spammers that are calling to tell everybody that their car warranty or their fridge warranty.
Oh my God.
You know, mine is all IRS. Mine always pretends to be the IRS. I don't know why.
Yeah, like telling you have another stimulus check coming. It's like, what the fuck, man?
Well, yeah, that's right. We're talking about hockey.
talking about optimism.
Oh, I did have one other thing, actually. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself because there's a long way to go, but I've been somewhat impressed by Seth Jones at times. Like, there's been, like, I wasn't entirely sure what he was good at just from, I haven't watched him a ton. So like there's ways that guys will stand out more and more if you watch them a lot more and more. And from watching Seth Jones, I don't think I've fully appreciated the combination of how big he is and how well he skates. As he moves pretty damn well.
Has he scored a primary point yet?
No one on the fucking team has.
Alex has a goal.
I'll look up the stats as I don't know.
This is what I was talking about in the offseason. Like, the guy's clearly athletic and talented, but every defenseman looks like shit because they're not playing good hockey.
He's got two assists, one on the power play, one on even strength. I think the power play assist was a primary one. I think he passed to the goal scorer.
Yes. He definitely has at least one primary point, which isn't like – so many people don't have that many primary like points in general, so I'm not going to knock it against him. I've liked Seth Jones. Other than the first game where I thought he looked just out of sorts, but everybody did, he got better in the second game. And then he and DeHaan have seemed to have found their groove. And I think both of them have looked better than any of the other defensemen, which is not something I would have said before because we obviously really like Murphy on this podcast. Mm. And then we also like McCabe. So, or at least I do. So
I thought I did. I'm getting a little worried.
I'm just worried because their number is your Gustafson's number, and I worry that's a jinx.
That's funny. We clearly like, especially Connor Murphy's been our guy collectively for a while, but it's like they look like shit. And again, I don't necessarily think it's because they can't play hockey. It's the situations they're thrown out in, how they're supposed to be playing. Maybe they have bad chemistry. Kalinuk being back with Murphy will be probably good for him, but it's rough to watch.
Maybe Wyatt Kalinuk will save us when he gets back in November.
And I also think that the other Jones will do well. Caleb, I was impressed with him all through the preseason, and I know that's just preseason hockey, but he was really good in every single game he played. Some of the guys kind of, didn't play full stop. And I think he probably had a top six role kind of locked up. I think they say they didn't promise it to him, but they probably did. and I think he earned it very easily.
And speaking of preseason hockey, like I remember the last preseason game they played was Saturday night against the Wild, and they pretty thoroughly kicked their asses 5-1. And again, I know it's preseason, but there were like the Hawks had a pretty loaded roster. Minnesota had a pretty loaded roster. I remember like after that game, like as I was thinking about that Saturday night, I'm like, all right, like I felt as good as you can about a preseason game leading into the regular season. I'm like, all right, maybe this team won't suck. Oops.
Maybe they need to play the Wild.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, I mean,
the Wild have won 3 games, but they've also played Anaheim and the Kings in those.
And I think they
the Kings are pretty. Kings are playing.
The Kings
okay,
are one
though.
And two. The Ducks are weirdly good.
Give it time.
No, I think the Kings.
The Buffalo Sabres are 3-0. So.
Yeah.
I was going to say earlier to defend my Eastern team. Aren't the Devils 3-0 too?
Maybe.
I'll tell you right now. Hold on.
All I know is the Ducks are like.
Devils are 2-0.
If we think the Blackhawks are bad possession wise, the Ducks have been like at the very bottom. And I know some of the Knights, which, sorry. the Ducks have a slightly worse expected goal share than the Blackhawks do. Like one's at like 40% and the other one's at like 34.
Well, unfortunately, the Hawks don't play Anaheim until March. So if you're looking for a little boost to confidence.
And that could either be a huge game or it can mean nothing at all.
But the Wild have been doing like, even though I think their stuff looks pretty good. I think they're scoring a lot better than they would. And that's impressive to me because they don't have Boldy because he got injured right before. And I don't think they've had Rossi up either.
They got Kirill the Thrill. So
he's the truth, man.
Yeah, he's so good. Capri Sun's great. I'm never not going to call him that after that.
Yeah, great nicknames. All right. So I think that's about all I can do with mustering up optimism. The other thing is like, there's room for improvement. There's your other dose of optimism. There is room for improvement. That word
there's vacancy, a lot of work there,
covering a lot of ground.
They can only go up.
Don't right? No, I'm not tempting. I don't want to tempt fate like that. It can always get worse.
Yeah,
that's no, question they're 0-4. I well, don't think it works.
It could be 0-10 real soon. So
if they're 0-10, everybody's fired. Sam Bowman's gone. If they're 0-10,
they might fire me.
Yeah, they might. They might fire us if they're 0-10.
They're like, shut down the site. The team is done.
We will get shut down because nobody will be reading our stuff because nobody will care anymore.
Oh no, we've been getting a lot of traction with them being pretty shitty.
Well, the rage only sustains for so long. Once we get to about December, well, we'll get to about Christmas, apathy will have set in completely.
That's not true. Hockey Buzz has no. Hockey Buzz runs off of rage. Okay, and they're super popular. So, all right.
Well,
I think we could.
I guess we'll have that going for us. So I guess now, well, we got some questions here. Got some on Twitter. Got some on the Second City Hockey comment sections. We want to address first one. Let's throw this up from Bradley J. His handle's at King Talkie Teeks. Why has God forsaken us? Have we angered him / her somehow? I think the answer there is clearly yes.
Yeah, please see us.
It's the sexual assault scandal.
Yeah.
That's how you anger God.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Asked and answered. Moving on. Let's see. Crystal is handles at Maple Stitch. Should we just calm down? I don't feel like my frustration is out of bounds, but maybe I'm way off base. Should we all just calm down?
No.
Fuck no.
No.
The rage is sustaining us.
Despite all my rage, you know.
I'm still just a rat in a cage.
Thank you. Shout out Billy Corgan.
I have nothing else to add to that. I think that's pretty much the best way we could answer that question.
Stay angry, my friends.
Yeah, maybe ask me next week if we can calm down if they've won a game. If they lose to Detroit, we're not going to have this podcast because I'm going to throw myself into traffic. You guys will have to take care of it. Cameron Lindsay wants to know, and we're getting cart way out of the horse, but let's do it anyway. Does Marc-Andre Fleury finish the season as a Blackhawk or even finish the season at all? I'm guessing the implication here is that he's going to retire by about Valentine's Day.
I think he's going to Pittsburgh.
No,
I don't think he'll get traded.
No, I don't think he's going to play in the Olympics and he's going to retire after the Olympics.
That would be an interesting move.
I was just going to say, I don't think he's going to get traded because one of his big concerns is being away from his family transplanting them. I was about to say transport and that's not...
Talk your way through it.
It's okay. He doesn't want to transplant them at all. So I feel like even if there was a chance for a cup, he wouldn't want to go anywhere. Not that I think anybody with a cup, like at a chance at a cup, would even be able to fit them him too much under their cap. Anyway, except maybe Tampa, who keeps putting players on LTIR. Not mocking them, not judging them.
Yeah, and they're probably not going to need a goalie unless something happens to Vasilevsky.
Isn't he off to a bad start, though?
Well, I would wager heavily on him
bouncing back
to the mean. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
They're screwing the pooch. They know what they're doing. It's early. They're playing with their food. They'll be fine.
They repeated. Now they want the number one pick. They want Shane Wright.
They've not looked good in their. They're not playing with their food right now. They're just hungover.
If Fleury finishes as a Blackhawk, I think he'll and retires. I still think he'll sign like a one day as a Penguin because,
yeah.
I mean, do you see those people in there for him? I mean, they love him.
They booed Lankinen coming out, like coming in, and I've never seen that before.
I mean, Pittsburgh are pretty loyal to their, like, I've been to a couple games there, and they love their guys, but I think they miss him too because Christian Jari sucks. Or Tristan Jari, sorry, whatever.
Christian Jari sucks.
And I think the other side of this and what is Fleury is so enjoyable. Just
right.
None of us have ever met him or hung out with him. We don't know how he is as a person, but all reports and all indications are that he is just a wonderful person to be around. And a fan base like Pittsburgh that, you know, he was there for about a decade at least. I'm sure he endeared himself to the fan base plenty over that time.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but we got a lot of season left before any trades happen, I think. Yeah. And like, except for Dylan Strome, who's apparently living on the block.
Yeah.
He's still Jenny from the block.
Yeah, I think he just picked up three more apartment buildings on the trade block because he's just buying up all the real estate there.
Send him to Ottawa for Eric Brandstrom, and then Brandstrom won't do anything as on the blue line.
I'm trying to figure out what former Hawk are they going to trade him for? That's Andrew Ladd. He's going to have a resurgent season. He scored his first goal in 3 years. That's
who's like in the league that's not like Panarin. You know what I mean? Like, who could they actually afford?
Somebody that's going to make us mad.
Gustavsson.
Yeah, they're not going to. Somebody, man. That would be beautiful, but no.
Gustafson's the most recent Hawks comeback, right?
Michael Kempney, who was put on waivers.
There it is. That's a great one.
He played good in that final, though, in that playoff.
Yeah.
I mean, he was fine.
It's a while ago. It was a while ago, too.
He was better than what a lot of the Hawks looked like that season on the blue line.
I mean, that's such a low bar. that's like tripping over it as you go.
You live and you die with the team. You start to see things that way.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal.
I will say, though, like, with going back to the Fleury thing, though, I guess that is the one nice thing that, well, I mean, his value might take a hit if the Hawks play as badly as they have, but the nice thing with having him on an expiring contract is that maybe you're able to move him at the deadline. But I know the thing that you said about him not wanting to uproot his family again, maybe he, like, takes, like, a 2-3 month, like, yeah, I'm going to go try and win one more cup, maybe, like, in Colorado if they figure out some way to LTIR him onto the roster. But I feel like you should be able to get decent value if they flip him at the deadline, if they can make it work, all parties involved.
I know who Dylan Strome's going to get traded for. They're going to call and say they want Nick Schmaltz back.
I like Nick Schmaltz.
Yeah, me too, but like, it's like, why? I don't even remember why they made that trade in the first place. Reclamation?
He was slumping. That's it. He slumped for 30 games and they were like done with him.
Oh my God.
Fucking
Sam Bolton. They were like, oh, we can get two players for him. And it's like, okay.
Oh boy.
Is he still in Arizona?
He is. Yeah. And he's still put up 50 point paces in every season he's been there.
Oh, or they could get, what's his name back for the third time, who signed in Buffalo? That everybody likes from Chicago. What the hell is his name? Tenestroza.
Yeah.
They're not getting Camp back. He's too good for Toronto.
But if Nick Schmaltz scores 50 points in Arizona, did it really happen? If anybody scores 50 points in a hockey season in Arizona, did it really happen?
Someone's got to do it.
One other question here. He's BMAC2 on the Second City Hockey comments. He has a bunch of rhetoricals about, did Strome sleep with Jeremy Colleton's wife? Like, maybe, I don't know. Trying to figure out what's wrong.
I haven't seen her.
But the question, the one question I do want to get through that he has is, do you buy what a lot of the Blackhawks beat reporters are saying, that even though Colleton has clearly lost the support of the fan base, as indicated by all the booing the other night, do you buy into what the writers are saying, that he hasn't lost the room? I certainly do. I see no indication that the players are rebelling against him in any way. And to be honest, I don't think we'd ever, it would be pretty tough for it to come out, because Taves and Kane don't ever seem to be the throw coaches under the bus publicly type of players. And they're the most front facing guys in the organization. So the way hockey culture is, someone would have to speak up and say something like that. And I don't think that's going to happen with this team.
Yeah. They traded that guy to Edmonton.
Well, to be fair, he would have to have had the room to lose it.
Well, okay.
But the thing is, they all of last season, there was this whole, like, we bought into the mentality thing, like, yeah, including from players like Malcolm Subban. Like, they have bought into that system. Until they tell me otherwise, I am also prone to believe that they are still bought in. Like,
yeah, I was about to say, they sound very genuine. If you, like, listen to the Taves when he was being asked, or Kane was being asked stuff, they sound genuine. Like, I'm not going to take them. I know we made a big deal out of, like, Taves' like weird look after the Vegas loss, because he didn't even shake Colleton's hand. He kind of like moved away from him.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, he's mad. And I think he was in that moment, because he didn't get put out, but I don't think he was.
That was also the moment, like, going back to like the ailment he had, that like he he had taken a, like a minute long shift. And then with a minute left, there was a timeout or something. And Tave said he could not catch his breath. So maybe he was still trying to figure out how to breathe again. And that's why he was so pissed off.
Well, to be fair, these are the Kane and Taves have only played for two coaches.
Yeah.
Like Duncan Keith played for like fucking, I don't know, four in Chicago.
Yeah.
So it's like, and these are guys who played on championship teams. Most of them aren't going to sandbag the coach, but Colleton sandbagged Keith publicly. So it's like,
that's true. Yeah.
And Seabrook.
And yeah, he did it to all of them that like he wanted to. So maybe I just think they didn't like each other. Fuck it. Whatever, you know,
yeah.
Taves and Kane figured they're a little bit more like they don't want to throw the guy under the bus.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Taves or Kane, like, or, you know, a private moment around family or friends are like, I don't know what the fuck this guy's talking about, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if those are ever going to make it to into the public domain. So
I've always wondered, so kind of the Dylan Strome situation. Dylan Strome is ridiculously good friends with Alex DeBrincat. He's very good friends with Patrick Kane. They're like playing buddies and stuff like that. They're travel buddies. He's good friends with Hagel. Like, a lot of these guys are like really close to him. And I know hockey is a business, so people, friends can be traded very easily. All sports are. But like, how do those guys feel? Like, they keep talking him up. They keep saying he's putting in the work. Kane, after one of the games, was talking about how Strome keeps coming in early and leaving late, and Kane started going in with him. So he wasn't alone on the ice to start. So it's kind of like, how do they feel about those types of things? Those might impact players' opinions of the coach more than them not winning.
Yeah, that's a very good point. To be a fly on a wall at whatever bar they go to anymore, if they even go to bars anymore, they're all.
Oh, there was like a thing from an old hockey player. I think it was an anonymous one that like they've traded in beers for juice. So yeah, whatever juice bar they're going to.
They're
well, Kane's banned from a lot of the bars in the area, as well as the Columbus area. So,
Kane supposedly has been sober. Like, apparently he stopped drinking after 2015. So.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, he was banned from some of those bars for quite a while. The illness in Columbus, quote, air quotes.
And the other aspect of it is, like, him being in his 30s now, like, the body doesn't quite recover like it used to when you're, and I can attest to that. I was never a professional athlete, but I can tell you, two or three beers now have a much different effect than it did on me when I was 23 years old. So,
true that.
And I'm sure that is an ailment that affects everyone. But professional athletes on an even higher level.
Right. No, but in all seriousness, like I do think that we should start asking that question more publicly. Like, what the fuck's up with Dylan Strome? Because it's very confusing.
And Ben Pope asks every single day, ask Colleton what's up, and Colleton finds creative ways to sidestep it.
He didn't even answer two different questions about Strome, not this last time, but the right before the last game. He didn't even mention Strome, really. He just kind of
telling
like goodbye.
he must have ran over the family dog or something.
I hope my one thing is that if Jeremy Colleton ends up being fired, but they trade Strome before he is, I'm gonna be annoyed, because I have no idea if Dylan Strome is actually going to be like a meaningful piece in the future, but I already feel like the coach has proven that he's not meaningful. So like, give Strome a chance under another coach. He's proven to be more successful in the NHL than Colleton has. So
not
Colleton's wrong. Wife and Seth Jones' mom are too busy on Twitter talking up their fucking family, blocking people.
I doubt they listen to the podcast, and if they do,
I don't know.
I've not said anything negative about Seth Jones on the ice, so I don't think I'll get blocked, but Colleton's wife might have blocked me by now.
Okay. All right. Well, I have nowhere else to add to that. I think that's best. We have one last question to get to, and this is in the vein of the food take category. It's from anonymous longtime commenter at secondcityhockey.com. Wants to know, party cut or pie cut?
Pie for me.
Pizza?
Yeah, pizza.
Yeah. Party like, cut.
Tavern cut. Tavern style. Right.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Devil Dog 29, another commenter, points out. Chicagoans call it tavern cut. But
what the one with the crust on every piece,
that would be pie cut.
Party cut. Pie cut. See, I go with that only because I'm guaranteed crust, because I like crust a lot. The only reason.
I'm also a pie crust person.
Even if I don't like crust, I want it on the pizza so that I'm not holding cheesy sauciness in my hand. You know, like
works as a holder too. You're right.
Yeah. I think I'm just more tavern cut because I think all the good pizza places that I go to go with the tavern cut style. So I think that's just what I prefer because that's what all the good places do. So
my favorite pizza place was also a tavern style cut. You can always ask for that uncut.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Like my favorite places are like that as well. But also I've had a lot of cheap bar pizzas that are cut that way as per the name. So
yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like pie cuts, that's like the, you know, 2 a.m. drunk slice of pizza style.
Which yeah, especially especially in a major city.
Yeah, there are a few better types of pizza than that.
It's also when you're walking around Costco eating a fucking piece of pizza bigger than your face.
I will say, though, with tavern cut pizzas, if you always, like, if you order just a little bit because you know you're going to have leftovers, what you want to do with a tavern cut is you eat the outside ring first, obviously, because it's there, but for cold pizza the next day after, anything with a crust on it, the crust doesn't reheat as well. So you get all the crust out of the way, and then you have nice cold square pieces in the middle, and you don't get all the cheesiness all over your hands because it's cold. So
yeah, it's just in the toaster oven. They're awesome.
Pro tip for you.
I don't like cold pizza, so that doesn't matter to me. I can understand why people would like tavern cut because in like a group setting, because some people don't like crust at all, so then they can have the middle pieces. But I need a holder, and I occasionally like crust. It depends on what the
depends on who makes it, because there's some good.
Yeah, exactly, and toppings too. Because I don't eat it with cheese, but if there are other things on it, I'll eat the crust. I don't know why.
You guys remember? Well, I don't know. I'm slightly old, but like when cheese stuffed crust came out, that was the shit.
It was
still like fine. This.
It's fine.
Yeah. Now they have, like, you could get all kind of shit in the crust, but, like, but it was, like, a big deal back then.
I don't like cheese. Cheese and crust either. Such a weirdo. I love cheese sticks, like cheesy bread.
We'll do that next offseason. We'll just have you can list all of your food.
Weird takes?
Yeah, all of your weird food options, and we will just either agree or yell at you.
Also, just really quick, you can buy a ticket to the Hawks game next week. And spend more money on a slice of DiGiorno at the United Center.
I'm probably going to. I'm going to buy resale, so like it doesn't count as an extra sold ticket. But I feel like if the tickets are going to be that low, like
I was going to say, two of my friends bought tickets for $35 each for plus like fees for the lower bowl, and they were like two drinks in, they 100% paid more for their drinks than their tickets.
That's crazy that tickets
have fuck that. Well,
not surprising though.
They to be fair, they got them like, you know, to be fair, they got them.
Thank you.
They got there like right before the game, like not too far. And then they were like, I don't know, like 5 minutes into the first period when they actually walked in. So
the only reason that makes me so mad is because the Wurts make 99 cents on the dollar for all that alcohol. It's not like a normal building because they're the distributor too.
Then I'll get a Pepsi.
Hey, if you sign up for the they haven't had Pepsi since like 2005. If you sign up,
I'll get a pop.
If you sign up to be a DD, they'll give you a free coke.
That's,
I think
that's right. That is correct. That is the pro tip. Free tips for the three people from that to listen to this and actually go to games anymore.
We could probably make you guys a quick guide for the site if you want.
Yeah,
but if you're gonna go to the Hawks right now, you're gonna want to be drinking.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on a sober kick right now because I need to lose some weight. So, like, and the Hawks make me fat by drinking. Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's wrap this all up. We're already on the topic of food and drinks anyway, so I understand that Shay has a take in the food category, something like that. So go ahead. Floor is all yours.
Okay. This might be the fact that I'm a pansexual non-binary person. Fruity drinks are underrated drastically. Like fruity cocktails are the best cocktails, probably the best alcoholic drinks, and Sex on the Beach, besides having a fantastic name, is probably the best drink known to man.
I don't know about Sex on the Beach, but the rest of that, 100% agree. Fruity drinks are better and you can get fucked up faster and they might, like, there's always more alcohol in them,
True.
But at the same time, you might not be able to taste it as much, so you can drink more quicker. And in the long run, they end up being, even though they're more expensive, they end up being cheaper for you because you'll have been, again, fucked up faster.
Exactly. And also, I forgot where I was going. Oh, they're more caloric, but who cares? Like, you're drinking anyway. Like, even if you're drinking whiskey, you're still adding calories to your diet.
I got away from most cocktails for a very long time because of all the reasons you guys mentioned, because you don't know how much is, like, you don't know how much booze is in there. You get fucked up way too fast. Things go sideways. At least I was always confident with, I know how much alcohol is in this beer. I know how many of these I can drink reasonably without getting too destroyed. And hangovers get worse as you get older, so I didn't want to drink quite as much alcohol. But I've slowly started making my way back into mixed drinks. I mean, obviously the quantity is way down because, you know, I'm not 19, but there's a lot of good ones out there. There's like a lot of the whiskey concoctions that people are making now are phenomenal. So I don't know if that counts as a fruity one though. I mean, they put fruit in them.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. Shay's probably really talking about the ones that are like an actual like
bright pink.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't know
if it comes in a tiki cup. Like if it comes in some tiki thing, yeah.
Or like the or like a big scorpion bowl. Yeah.
Yeah. Sign me up for anything that's in a fish bowl too. Like ready for it.
Exactly.
So if margaritas are under this umbrella, then I'm all for it because.
I mean, margaritas can be like neon. There's neon blue margaritas.
Margaritas, like, if speaking of drinks that they were really good at hiding the liquor in, Jesus Christ. If you go to, like, there's a lot of Mexican restaurants all over the Chicagoland area. The margaritas are never not deadly. But also,
I think you can cut off the first part. Margaritas are never not deadly.
That's okay. I haven't been to Mexican restaurants really outside of the Chicago area, so I can't speak to them, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think my palate's been shaped too much by the fact that I'm always at shows. So, like, if you're playing a show or you're going to watch, like, you really are going to have, like, beer or shots, you know? And so it's, like, I'm mostly drinking tequila straight up, silver.
Okay.
Or
I was like, going to say, you could get fruity shots. Like, lemon drops exist. Like...
Yeah, but then I'm going to have a stomachache. my stomach's pretty sensitive to sugar. But, like... If we're playing and you go to the green room, like they just have beer for you for free. And it's like, okay, cool. It's free. But I enjoy that. I like a margarita sometimes. I like mules, Mexican mules specifically, or like I'll have a vodka soda, but I'm pretty boring and I'm not doing that to be like, oh, fuck that other shit. Like, I think everybody should enjoy what they want. I just am not very fun. I'm just being bleak, but I like enjoy, like I love beer. So that's just my palate.
I think me and LBR are both firmly kind of anti-beer.
No, and that's cool. Like, I don't think everybody should like it. Everybody's palate's different and everybody likes different things. And your body also reacts differently, you know?
It's true. Fruity drinks all the way though.
But also like for me, like I said too, if I'm playing, I can drink a beer and like a 30 or 40 minute set, couple beers.
Yeah, because you're not trying to get fucked up.
I mean, yeah, like you can't drink like a fucking, you know, cocktail where you're going to be shot into space and then I'm going to fall over. Okay, so basically my rap on this is like, I'm a shot and a beer kind of person, but if I have a bar at my house, I want to have a little bit of everything because I don't want to have the reputation of like, oh, I don't like anything else. It's like everybody should be able to like what they like. And I'm also like on the sober October a little bit because... I want to cut some weight, but also I have to record some vocals and I'm not a good singer and alcohol is really bad for your voice.
Axl Rose disagrees.
It's really hard to sing.
When you say you like everything, isn't there like a thing that like, you're not supposed to have liquor after beer? Like, isn't like,
yes.
What is
so
it?
Beer before liquor, never been sicker. Liquor before beer, you're in the clear.
You're supposed
for to. For me, I mean, that's bullshit for me.
You're supposed to start with the higher alcohol content and work your way down.
No, like you drink, you take a shot and then you have a beer and you have another shot. You can alternate. It's just, you have to eat good first. The people don't, they make the mistake of not eating thinking they want to get fucked up. Yeah.
Yes.
Water.
It's eating and
drink
drinking.
Water, kids.
Yeah.
Drink your water.
The last thing in your the last thing to hit your lips shouldn't be alcohol. It should be water before you go to bed, and that's how you avoid.
But if you have too many fruity drinks, and you pass out, you better hope okay, there's water.
Maybe it's me, but I don't pass out after fruity drinks.
I've never. Nope. I get to a high and then I am good to cruise for a while.
Yeah, that it's a slow cruise too.
It's gonna take a while for you to come down. So if you do it smart enough, you get drunk real quick, and then you plateau for a while, and you're good to go. And you'll eat, you'll drink water, and you'll be good.
I mean, you could do that with Jameson too, or Crown. Like I drink water with Crown.
I do love whiskey, in general. So like I'll do that too, but beer is not my thing. And if I'm going to drink something that's not a mixed drink, it's going to be cider. So I guess fruit still, technically.
Either way, nobody wants to hear my voice in general. So when I have too much alcohol, my voice is dried out. I just sound like death. I can't hit any fucking notes and it's terrible.
I think the main issue I have with most mixed drinks in general is just that, like, you will, those can hit you out of the blue. Like you don't realize how much liquor was in that last drink that you just finished. And like you're sitting at the bar talking to people around you. And then you stand up and you're like, oh, I'm really fucked up. And I have an entirely full drink that I have to go back and drink after this. So that's where the caution flag comes out for me. Cause with beer, I think it doesn't hit you out of nowhere like it does with mixed drinks, because the alcohol content can vary greatly. Based off,
I'm going to disagree with that, because I think just standing up whenever you're sitting down and drinking is like automatically is going to be like, what the hell?
Yeah, but it's the degree to which that alcohol hits you. And if you've been, I feel like
I'm with you on this, Dave, because when you go to the airport, some of them you have to get mixed drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never consistent.
Yeah. I'm not anti mixed drinks. I'm just like, it's more of like a personal experience at this point that like I feel like I've retired from the mixed drinks just because I know what can happen.
You like the consistency of
there's the beer. Word yeah. Consistency. Oh. Exactly.
It's well, I'll say this. Now when we all have a box together at a game one day, I'll know what to order everybody.
Well, we'll be the only four people there.
I didn't specify what team's game it was. I just said a game.
We'll go to Hawks and Coyotes in March if they have a game, and the four of us will walk in and double the attendance.
We're rooting
for every Coyotes goal, just like the Coyotes were rooting for every like Buffalo goal years ago.
I'm sitting here with a Coyotes hat on, so don't judge me.
I was gonna say you guys should come to the Nashville game that's gonna be New Year's Day? Yeah.
I'm not sure I want to be around Predators fans with the Hawks being this bad.
I've never actually had any problems with Predators fans. Right. They're usually really nice, but I'm a girl, so I'm not totally sure that doesn't play into it, because I also don't pay for a lot of drinks when I'm there. My friend Rebecca gets a ton of free drinks just by existing, so I kind of live vicariously through that. But Preds fans are really nice, have always been really nice to me. One time I was in a box seat and a guy shared his nachos with me because I couldn't get out. And he just, like, they were having, like, they had food being served in their thing that was bought for by, like, a company. And my friend Trish was like, oh, man, I wish we had food. And he was like, do you want some, like, nachos? We have, like, lots of nachos. And we were like, well, yes, I would love some free food.
The way this is gonna have to work is we're gonna have to be close enough to you to reap all these rewards of all the free stuff, but not close enough where anybody thinks we're with you.
Yeah, we were with
That's
guys
how we with make them. This work.
We were with friends that were male friends at the time. They were sitting right next to us. So. And it's really it's less me and more my friend.
It's a good friend to have.
Like just existing.
The only stranger who's bought me drinks at a Hawks game was I went to a game with my boss, and his buddy is married to Sarah Spain, and he was really cool. I think he runs the Heckler.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
And Brad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I met him. He was super cool, and he was buying us drinks, and like he was buying everybody pork tacos. I don't know. He was a cool guy. But I don't think that was anything to do with who I was. I think it was just who my boss was.
Trick also is find older guys that are like talking about hockey and talk to them. They'll give lots of those. That happened in Philly. They gave this like these two older gentlemen who had been like Philly people, like they were huge Flyer fans. They bought like everybody in our little section, not like the whole section, but like we were in one of the little side corner pieces. They bought like the two rows around us drinks essentially because they were just really excited us talking. Mm-hmm. And that's happened at Bridgestone too, where older gentlemen had like, oh, how many do you think they'll score? It was during that that game where Ranta and Darling both came in and they both let in like a million goals, but so did the Predators. Like it was one of those like back and forth games. So
the other episode we're gonna have to do in the post in the off season is Betsy explains how to get free drinks at hockey games.
And then I'm gonna test it on single older women at the UK.
Yes. Well, for science.
And for science. And if I'm walking in a straight line at the end of the game, you'll know I didn't do very good.
All right. All right, well, I can't think of a better place to wrap up this episode than right there. So let's go ahead and put a bow on this edition of Musings on Madison. Stay tuned to secondcityhockey.com. We're going to keep writing about this team for better or for worse. Hope to God for better. The main account is at 2ndcityhockey on Twitter. You can follow me at @SCH_DaveM. Mill is at Mill182. Shepherd is at Shepherd Price. Betsy's not on Twitter, but you can find all her stuff under the name LBR at secondcityhockey.com, where all of our content will be. We'll have more podcasts, more previews, more recaps, more yelling at the clouds between games as we all try and make it through whatever the hell this team is doing right now. And keep coming back. Hopefully next week isn't such a group therapy session, and hopefully have more hockey to talk about instead of just talking about booze for 3 hours. But maybe we'll just talk about booze for 5 hours next week based on whatever the hell this team does. But thanks for everyone for hanging out again tonight. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, please, for the love of God.